Hi, Barry Eaton with you again, and welcome to Radio Out There. Dreams. We all have them. Mostly we don't remember them, that's the big problem. Can dreams talk to us? Can they be a result of all sorts of things going on in our life? Nightmares, where do they come from? Well, this week on the program, Linda Schiller, whose new book PTS Dreams has just been released, is going to talk to us about the effect of dreams, especially the nasty ones at times, what we can do about it, why they happen repetitively, all sorts of things. Linda Schiller, this week's guest on Radio Out There. Linda, hi, welcome to Radio Out There.
Thank you so much, nice to be here.
Now, you're in Boston, I'm in Sydney, here we are, it's almost a dream away. Now, you specialise in dreams, and your wonderful book, PTS Dreams, we're going to talk about that today. Now, I've talked about dreams on the program a few times, but let's just sort of go back to basics a little bit. First of all, tell us about yourself, because you're a dream expert, aren't you?
Oh, thank you. I guess I could use that word. So I live in the Boston area, and I'm a psychotherapist. I've been practicing for about 40 years, and I do use a sort of integrated approach of body, mind, and spirit. And I'm traditionally trained, and I'm also trained in a lot of other alternative therapies, such as EMDR and a lot of different body-mind techniques and energy psychology and somatic work. And I've been a student of a variety of spiritual disciplines for a long time, particularly Kabbalah and also some Native American indigenous work. I live in just outside Boston. I have two cats. My daughter just started graduate school.
that's a nice little picture. Thank you for that. Talking about dreams, though, because this is your specialty, let's go back to the basics, because we've talked about dreams on the program on a couple of occasions, but not in the area of trauma. But let's get down to basics. Does everybody dreams, don't they?
Yes. So when people say, I don't dream, that's actually incorrect, because just biologically we all dream every night. We have 5 to 7 REM cycles. What they actually mean is I don't remember my dreams.
Yeah.
Yes, everybody dreams every night.
Yeah, and that's it. And most of us don't remember because they can be anything from just a pleasant contact with somebody or a thought or a flying dream. I like flying dreams. I guess we all have those too. But there's a spiritual explanation for that. But when we get down into the serious side of dreams, what can dreams actually tell us?
Dreams can tell us so many different things. They can be sort of a rinsing out of what happened to us in the last day or two, to sort of the way our body-mind processes the events of the day or the week. Dreams can come in symbol and metaphor and point us in directions of chasing after or pursuing a meaning that isn't there quite on the surface of the dream. Dreams can be health alerts. It's called prodromal dreams, and these can come and give us sort of medical alerts of things to pay attention to in our bodies. Dreams can allow us to be in contact with departed relatives from the other side. And dreams, if they are the nightmare kind of dream, can be what I call an SOS from our unconscious, which means there's something we haven't fully metabolized or synthesized or come to terms with in our life. And our dreams are coming to tell us, pay attention. It's something you need to know and do. And we're going to keep coming back until you know and do it.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, in my research and writing books about the afterlife, I know that just about everybody has contact from a loved one after they've passed. And dream is the first way of contact, really, because it's the easiest. We go to sleep, we've got them on our mind, perhaps, and they come through. And we had a passing in my family just a couple of weeks ago. And the person who passed came through almost immediately. Not great big, long, medium-type messages or anything, but just to sort of say, okay, I'm still here, I'm around, I'm safe, don't worry about me. I haven't disappeared off into some big black hole somewhere. So that is the common way I've found of people contacting us initially from the other side. It's step one. Have you found that?
Yes. And I was surprised when you said that the person in your life who passed came through almost immediately, because my experience is that it sometimes takes people a little while to get settled over there on the other side before they're ready to come back and visit.
But sometimes they can just come back in a great communication way, but just in a reassuring sort of a way, almost just like an image or a thought or a transfer of love or whatever.
Absolutely. And what I tell people in terms of visitations and dreams is that when we dream of a relative who's departed, there are two kinds of dreams. And one is a dream where they're a character in the dream, and the other is a visit.
Yeah.
And the visit dreams are usually discerned from the other kind by a vividness and a felt sense of the presence of the other person in your dream. And you know this from your own work, as if they're right there, right with us. And it could be just a hi, how are you kind of thing, or I'm fine. Or we can really have deep conversation sometimes with our departed relatives.
Yeah. It's just the initial stages can be very brief, but when they're ready to come back, when they've gone through the healing process and the settling in process on the other side, then they can come back, and it doesn't always have to be through a medium. We can contact them directly in our dream state. And I know people that have regular dreams with departed friends and relatives.
Absolutely. I do too.
Yeah.
I can tell you two quick stories that then my dad died some years ago. This is not in the dream state, but it's sort of like a waking dream equivalent. There was a bright red cardinal that came and tapped at my mom's window every night for a whole week. And never before and never since had that happened.
Yeah.
And she was convinced. And now whenever we see a cardinal, we just say, you know, hi, Dad. And he's a big traveler. So he comes through not only in my dreams, but in my waking life, but in my dreams, I remember the first visit, I could hear the timbre of his voice, just exactly the way he sounded in life. And it was just very, very clear.
It's amazing, isn't it? I had another guest on my program a couple of times, and he talked about a visit from a red cardinal as well. So perhaps there's some kind of correlation between red cardinals and contact from the other side, whether that's a sort of a symbol or what, I wonder.
That's interesting. I know that very often a bird of some sort is an indicator of a contact from the other side, and I don't know how much that is our association with you know, spirits having wings or not, but I've heard of this as well with other people, with cardinals. And owls, too, a harbinger often of a passing, dreaming of an owl or encountering an owl.
Yeah, fair enough. But your book that you've just put out is talking about something far deeper, something more troubling, and people go through it in varying degrees. The book is PTS Dreams, and, well, it's a book about nightmares and traumas and everything like that. And I guess at the present stage, what we're going through in the world with all the fear and carry on that's going on, has there been a rise in this kind of dream activity, do you think?
Oh, absolutely, yes. A couple of colleagues of mine, one colleague in particular, Deirdre Barrett, had a book called Pandemic Dreams, which she cataloged several thousand dreams from people all over the world dreaming of various terrifying, creepy, bug-related images and other things because of the pandemic that we've all been experiencing. So when we talk about dreams or nightmares that are generated by trauma. It can be personal things in our lives, people who have had personal traumas either in their childhood growing up or in their adult life. And it can also be world trauma, like what we've kind of been going through all over the world for the last several years, ranging from the pandemic, as I mentioned before, to climate change, to violence, to war, to changes in administrations of governments. There's been a lot of unsettling, traumatic events in our life, and that shows up in our dream life as well.
Yeah. Is this an automatic thing with some people, that they allow that stress level or fear level or whatever to trigger these dreams?
Well, I don't think it's about... Well, there's two ways to answer that. It's not allowing or not allowing. There are... Ernie Hartman, who did a lot of research on dreaming, so there are two kinds of people in the world. There are thin-boundaried people and thick-boundaried people. And it's not a hierarchy, neither one is good or bad, but we have sort of different sort of makeups, if you will. And thick-boundaried people are the ones who are more analytically oriented, they're more left-brain, they are more oriented to science, and they don't usually get the kind of connection and association with less concrete things that the thin boundary people do.
Yeah.
So the thin boundary people are those among us who more easily traverse time and space and can visit other dimensions. And sometimes they're referred to as highly sensitive people or as empaths. But the people who feel and connect deeply both with themselves and other people and with things that are harder to explain in left-brain linear logic. Mm. So these might be our artists, our musicians, our therapists, our mediums, our more right-brain people. And again, neither one is better or worse, but I think that the thin-boundary people are the ones who, unless they pay attention to putting up additional guards or boundaries or protections, will be more likely to... have the stuff of the world seep in.
Yeah. Are you finding that the right-brained people, and you don't always have to be a creative person to be right-brained, though, do you? There are creativity in many different ways. Are you finding in your studies and contacts that this area is growing, that people are opening up a lot more to interdimensional travel, as you mentioned there before, associated, leaving the body, accepting these kind of dreams? Are you finding that these numbers are increasing?
Well, you know, I haven't done any research on it, and I think partially it has to do with the company we keep. So the people that you and I might know, I might be finding that. I don't know if I can speak to, you know, the world at large or people. Like I just had the launch for the book at a bookstore the other day, and we were talking about, you know, who was there and how lovely it was. I had a lot of friends and colleagues who were there, and someone asked me, you know, about whether or not people value dreams. And I said, we tend to remember dreams more if we value them, and that the people who don't value the dreams aren't here at the reading.
Yeah.
Because they're not interested in it. So it's a little bit of self-selection, I think.
All right, well, look, let's quickly talk about trauma, because it's basically a book about nightmares and trauma. And how do you define trauma?
Oh, it's $1 million question. Well, trauma is very, what's the word I'm looking for? It's subjective. So there's the thing or things that happen that are life-threatening or feel life-threatening either to us personally or that we witness or to people around us. So there's the things that happen, and then there's our reaction and response to the things that happen. And not everyone who goes through a traumatic experience or an upsetting experience is going to develop PTSD, because PTSD means post-traumatic stress disorder.
Yeah.
And if our system is able to process and metabolize what happened, and if we have enough support around us And if we have enough safety in our life following the trauma, then our system will sort of process it and rinse it out, and we'll move on, and we won't develop PTSD.
What
we haven't had enough safety or support is when it becomes ingrained in our system, and then we can develop a variety of different symptoms that are reflective of the disorder, which include nightmares.
Yeah, so nightmares and trauma, do they have to come together as a pair, or can they be separate?
Well, they can definitely be separate. There are a variety of different reasons why we might have nightmares, ranging from, you know, we ate some kind of bad oyster and, you know, we have indigestion, and literally that can cause us to have a nightmare.
Sure.
To there are developmentally normative stages in like a child's life and sometimes in adolescence as well, where just by virtue of being a little person who big people have control over, they have nightmares about being trapped or not having control in their lives. And that's just a developmentally normative stage. It's not about trauma per se. And then there are hormonal changes. There are effects from medications, from recreational drugs as well as medications that can cause nightmares. And then there's the category where we're reacting and responding to scary, painful, difficult events in our life, which would be the trauma response.
Yeah, yeah. And do these traumas inevitably lead to some form of nightmare at some stage along the journey?
Not always, because everybody is unique. And there's the DSM, which is the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, I think we're up to I don't remember the number of editions, but there's a whole long list of symptoms that people might have. And there's post-trauma response, which is a whole array of symptoms that we might have, such as a heightened startle response, or feeling kind of numb, or feeling very anxious, or having a little bit of agoraphobia or claustrophobia, a whole lot of different things depending on what the trauma was, that will pass over time. Sometimes people have flashbacks of the event that happened or events that happened, which is sort of like a waking nightmare, where in waking life it feels like you're going through it again. It's actually happening to you, but it's not. And that's kind of like the waking equivalent of a nightmare. Not everybody will have nightmares from trauma, but I think the longer trauma goes unresolved, the higher the likelihood that we'll begin to have nightmares, because our system is trying desperately to process it. Our system wants to come into balance. And if it's not able to, it's going to give us like an SOS, like an alert that there's something else we need to do to get in balance.
Okay, fair enough. Let's take a quick break here now. Let everybody think about some of these things. We'll play a nice bit of music and back shortly. And my special guest today on Radio Out There is Linda Yale Schiller. Back shortly.
Keep pouring up the wind, wind. Stars shining bright above you. Night breezes seem to whisper, I love you. Birds singing in the sycamore tree. Dream a little dream of me. Say nighty-night and kiss me. Just hold me tight and tell me you'll miss me. While I'm alone and blue as can be, dream a little dream of me. Leave all worries behind you, but in your dreams, whatever they be, dream a little dream of me.
And that's Mama Cass from the Mamas and Papas and one of her big, big songs, Dream a Little Dream of Me. You see, not all dreams have to be nightmares. We just got to think positive. You're listening to Radio Out There. Now back to Linda. Linda, we talked very briefly before about messages coming through from guides and angels and downloads and all sorts of things like that. How much have you found, getting onto the spiritual side of you at the moment, that maybe the soul or the higher self plays a role in this, that it comes out as a warning, that it may use the trauma message or the nightmare message to alert us, to make us think, to have an associated thought, or what? Have you found that?
It's an interesting way of thinking about it, because depending on your orientation of what is a dream or where do dreams come from, we can answer that in so many different ways. And for some people and some cultures, the answer is so the dreams or the nightmares come from beyond, come from the universe, come from God, come from some higher consciousness that we then are open to when we're sleeping. And what gives us the opportunity is when we work with the nightmares, when we work either on our own or with other people, with friends, with relatives, with a guide, with a therapist, we have the opportunity to transform the fear and the terror that come with the nightmares into actually post-traumatic spiritual growth. And so the last chapter, actually, my book is called From PTSD to PTSG, Post-Trauma Spiritual Growth.
Yeah.
So that in processing these fears, we can come out stronger and more whole even than we were before we started.
Well, that's the aim, isn't it? I mean, it's not that you want to go deeper and deeper. You want to get back to the surface and start to work on this sort of thing.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. So let's talk about some of the ways that in your book that you can help people to be able to process, to work through their nightmares, through their traumas, and resolve the situation so that they can have a nice restful night's sleep.
Yeah. The first thing I always tell people is to value the messages that are coming through in the night, because if they only discount them or only run from them, they're not going to be able to attend to the messages that they're getting, however uncomfortable that is.
Yeah.
So everyone should, if they want to work with their dreams and nightmares, should have some sort of a journal where they can write them down, because we all know that we either don't remember well or we don't remember enough if we don't get it down in paper or type it or something at least.
Yeah.
So you can anchor it and then go back and work on it later.
I think there's a pretty common sort of message from many, many people in the spiritual world. You must write your dreams down because, you know, 5 or 10 minutes after you wake up, if you don't do something, they're gone, aren't they?
That's right. It's like a, you know, mist or a puff of smoke. And poof,
yeah.
They're gone. So, and one of the things that people say is like, oh, you know, I had a dream, but I got up and I had to go to the bathroom or I get in the shower, and then all of a sudden I remember I had a dream, but I don't know what it was.
Yeah.
And one of my favorite ways of recapturing a dream, so you can write it down even if you didn't do it right away, is if you have a few minutes, go back into bed and put yourself in the physical position you were in when you were sleeping. And very, very often, it never fails to amaze me, you get what's called positional memory, and your body then will remember the dream that you had that you thought you had forgotten.
Yeah.
And then you can write it down.
That's a lovely tip. Yeah, that's a great tip, isn't it? And it makes sense, really, because you're putting yourself back into that physical location, and you're allowing then your mind to just relax and accept that information.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And we know that in a dream there's the storyline narrative of the dream, and then there's the emotional narrative of the dream. And that's the difference, by the way, between a dream and a nightmare, is when the emotional narrative of the dream, the feelings in the dream, are scary, negative, angry when they're large. And we know that feelings are embodied, right? We feel feelings in our body. So when we tune in to what's going on in our body, either to remember a dream or to work with our dream, to pay attention to our physical sensations and our felt sense, and we have a whole other layer in which to be able to understand and work through the dream.
Yeah, working through them. I mean, I wonder how many people think it's important enough to work through the dreams, or just think, oh, well, that was a dream, yeah, okay, I had a horrible thought in the night and an ugly face came at me out in the darkness or something, just get rid of that and go off and have a nice coffee and get into the day. How many people dismiss them, do you think, and not accept that there is a message?
I have a feeling that probably the majority of people in the Western world have not valued dreams as much as they might be advised to or suggested to, but in earlier times and in Native and Indigenous cultures, I think there's a lot more respect for uncanny ways of knowing and messages from our unconscious and messages from the earth. But I'm also hopeful and optimistic because in my circles anyway, and I think in yours as well, there are more and more people who are recognizing that there's more than one way to know something. And, you know, even if we go back to some of our scientists, like Albert Einstein was a very, very spiritual, mystical man. And he totally believed, you know, that his whole, all quantum mechanics actually is closer to mysticism than anything we would ordinarily find in a laboratory.
Yeah. Yes, a lot of people just think that he was a man who stood up in front of a blackboard and had strange marks all over the place, but symbols and whatever. But no, you're right, he was a very, very spiritual man. And I think the role of spirituality in understanding and working with and helping yourself in these areas is very strong. What do you think?
Absolutely. And by spirituality, you may or may not be connected with any particular religious faith or tradition. That's one beautiful, wonderful option. But it doesn't have to be Christian or Jewish or Muslim or Hindu. It can be you go out in nature and being at the ocean or being on the mountaintop is your way of connecting with the divine. So there's going into deep meditation, sitting in your room can be your way of connecting with spirituality. Sitting with your back against the trunk of a tree and feeling the connection and the communication between yourself and this other living being. So there's a variety of ways to invite a spirituality into our lives, not just through religious experience. So that is certainly just as wonderful and as valid for people who are following a particular faith.
Well, I think when you look at the stats about religious observance and people working or attending church and whatever, those numbers are dropping, but people are looking for something else. And I think that's why they're dropping. They don't want dogma. They want to be able to get out there, as you said, discover spirituality for themselves in the world, in life, in nature. Go to the beach, just sit there and look at the water and just allow yourself to be part of life. And I think more and more people are starting to realize the power of that. So do you find that's a great way of being able to work with trauma and nightmares?
Yes. One of the phrases that we often hear in the field of trauma treatment is that going through traumatic events can be soul-shattering experiences.
Yep.
And we also hear with sort of shamanic practice, but the equivalent of that the soul or the spirit actually leaves the body or gets separated from the body. And that's sort of a shamanic view of the phenomenon of dissociation, which is exactly that we fragment into parts when there's more distress and trauma than we can handle at any given point in time. So the healing comes about sort of putting our pieces back together again and inviting our soul and our spirit back in to reside in our body. And I just heard a lovely metaphor today. You're the first person I'm telling, actually. Right now is Rosh Hashanah, which is the new year. And at a service that I was at, I heard someone refer to our soul, our spirit, as kind of the pilot light inside of us. that little ember, the flame, that never goes out. But sometimes it gets very dim, and we need to find ways to fan it, to protect it, to guard it, to make it larger so that that light can refill us and we can feel it in our whole body. And that's a big part of the work of healing from trauma and from nightmares, is to feel that reconnection with our soul selves.
Yeah. Interesting you say that. I went to my very first Rosie Shamar dinner the other night here in Australia. And here you are mentioning it. And
probably not just by chance, right? Here's a synchronicity for us.
Linda, you talk in the book about family legacy burdens or epigenetic ancestral dreams that come in. Now, as soon as I saw that, I thought, okay, is this simply karma?
Well, yes and no. What we do know is that we can inherit things, for better or for worse, from our families and from our ancestors. And we can inherit more than physical characteristics or tendencies to be tall or short, or, you know, to gain weight or not gain weight. We can also inherit things that happened in our family background. And the research in epigenetics now is showing us that there actually is a change in the genetic coding that occurs when we've gone through different experiences. So we're carrying in the coding of our genes the reaction or response to this, in this case, if we're talking about traumas, to the traumatic events that not just we ourselves, but that our ancestors have gone through as well. So there's several ways of understanding that, and one is from a genetic standpoint, but the other is, if you simply think about growing up in a family and being parented. So if your great-grandparents suffered in a famine, for example, and they were starving and they were malnourished, and finally they got to a safe enough place and they married and had children, but they brought up your grandparents with, you know, finish everything on your plate, never waste any food, you never know if you're going to be starving. And then they parented your parents in the same way, who parented you that way. You're going to grow up with a sensitivity to, oh my God, I could be starving, even though that wasn't your personal experience, but it was passed down from generation to generation.
And this can lead to dream problems.
Well, we can carry these messages that we receive in, often they're not in our waking life. They're sort of unconscious because it's at a subliminal level, but then they show up in our dreams.
Yeah.
And what is so fantastic is that once we identify what is and isn't our own experience, what is our work, what happened to us for better and worse in our own lifetime, and what we're resonating with that happened a generation or two or three ago, and you say, oh, this isn't my issue, this is my grandmother's issue.
Mm.
Oh, okay. So we can send light and healing and love to our grandmother and have it carry forwards and backwards in time,
right,
including to us, and say, ah, here's where the karma ends, right? So here we'll bring that. We can use the same word here.
But we also inherit part of our families, our ancestors' DNA. As further back it goes, of course, the less percentage of the DNA, but it's there. So is this a correlating factor?
Could you ask the question again? I didn't quite catch it.
Well, is it part of DNA that we inherit from our family that can lead to these sort of things, these subconscious feelings, which could then manifest into nightmares and at the extreme end, even trauma?
Yes. Not everyone, and not always. And what I always want to point out is that in addition to inheriting, and we don't want to use the word necessarily too literally, because it's not quite the same form of inheritance. It's an effect on the genetic coding as opposed to, it's called methylization of the gene as opposed to an actual mutation. It's not a mutation. But we also could inherit gifts and the bright spots from our past. And part of our healing then is to remember and recall what lovely things, what gifts did we inherit from the past, and those then we can bring into our consciousness to help us heal from the traumatic events that may have happened in lives of our families.
Yeah, yeah. Now, the aspect of fear in all of this, F-E-A-R, which I was bring down the acronym false evidence appearing real, but the fear that we can build deep inside ourselves, how much does that impact on our dreams, our nightmares?
Well, the fear is what we're responding to and what is creating more fear. You know, Roosevelt famously said, the only thing we have to fear is fear itself. Well, there are very scary things out there in the world or out there in the cosmos and inside of us. But if we can literally as well as figuratively take a deep breath and bring ourselves into a state of calm, and that's part of the Gaia method that I work with in terms of helping people work with their nightmares, if we can start with feeling safe and start with feeling accompanied by others who are with us to support us, then we quiet that fear, and then we can face the traumas and the monsters that have been pursuing us in our dreams from a place of safety and connection, rather than feeling all alone or trapped, as we were perhaps in the dream itself.
Yeah, yeah, fair enough. Now, it sounds like you've covered many different areas, of course, in writing your book, PTS Dreams. Do you find that everybody who does suffer from nightmares and trauma is going to get something from your book?
Well, I would like to think so, yes. I certainly couldn't guarantee it, but I think so. I mean, one of the things that I brought to this book is decades of experience, both as a trauma therapist and really well-versed in a variety of different forms of trauma treatment, as well as years and years of doing dream work. And I actually wasn't planning to write this second book quite so soon on the heels of my first one. The first book I wrote on dream work was called Modern Dream Work, New Tools for Decoding Your Soul's Wisdom. And that came out about 2.5 years ago. And I knew I had this other book in me, but with the world being... But I wasn't planning to write it so soon, so I joked that during the pandemic, some people, you know, learned how to knit, and some people baked sourdough bread, and I wrote this book because I really felt called that the world kind of needed this information now, not later. So there was a part of me that just felt like, you know, I wasn't going to movies, I wasn't going to restaurants, I didn't have much of a social life during the pandemic, so I used the extra time to get the book out in the world and hopefully to be a resource for people.
Yeah, fair enough. All righty. Well, as the title says, PTS Dreams, Transform Your Nightmares from Trauma Through Healing Dream Work. So that's a good one. So the book is now out, published. It's available all around the place?
Right. You can get it from the publisher, Llewellyn Worldwide Publishing.
Yep.
You can get it, of course, online from Amazon. You can get it from a place called bookshop.org, which is an indie bookstore website. And you can go to your local bookstore, and if they don't have it, you can ask them to order it.
Fantastic. And do you have a website?
I do. So the book itself has a website,
right,
which is ptsdreams.com. And then I have a website of my own, sort of all of my various work, which is lindayaelschiller.com.
Okay, that's fantastic. Well, look, thank you so much for appearing on the program, and it's certainly going to make people know that they don't have to be dominated by nasty dreams and monsters and things like that. There is a reason, and there is a solution. Linda, lovely to have you on the program. Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure talking to you, Gary, and I wish you great healing in your dreams and in your life.
Thank you. Linda Schiller coming to us all the way from Boston in Massachusetts. And that's it for this week on the program. Thanks very much for your company. I look forward to being with you again next week. I've got a very interesting lady, Susan Chomsky, to introduce to you. That's next week on Radio Out There. And we're going to be talking about, well, why don't you listen in and find out? See you then.